international detective dragons from outer space.
Testing. Ah, there it is. Okay. Hello and welcome. Or welcome back to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Adam 5, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to episode 63. The topic for this installment is...
Two generations after an apocalypse, the survivors will hear 3 minutes of audio from you. What will they hear?
In this show, we'll hear from most brilliant friend Nikki, Sarah of Does My Geek Look Big In This, the Norwegian Viking Mr. T, the recently published James Stubbs, Ed the Puppeteer, and Direwolf. Plus, a new welcome to the Frapper Map and multiple shoutouts. We are at the top of the hill now and the sled has started to slide. Hang on tight and don't tip over. Back after this.
With Webster's smog fuel.
Only a roll.
Once again, welcome to Your Song Parade. Half an hour of glorious musical boredom with songs that your mother loved and everyone else hated.
Thank you, Dennis Main. Tonight I am including in my repertoire Schubert's Violin Sonata, guest soloist Billy Hugh Scott. And now, request spot. My first request comes from Jack Blonger, a two-headed Mongolian criminal tram driver who is under treatment for the dreaded emulsion of the legs and the green lurgy. Cheer up, Jack. I'm all right.
Very full docket today. Lots of folks on the list. Excellent feedback and lots of it. Plus some shout-outs I'm going to start with because I'm going to get shout-outs done at the top of the show and leave my rambling wanderings, which aren't going to be very long this episode, he says, for after the emails. So let's get started with what? A welcome to the Frapper Map. Frapper Map, I don't know how broken or not broken it is. I do know one thing, though, and you've heard this already in previous episodes. It is still easy enough, so far as I can tell, to post a picture, to get an image of any type that you particularly want to represent you as a listener up in the photos gallery, at least. I'm not seeing new pins happening, though I'm sure people are trying to post them. Don't know what the deal is there, Frapper. Thank you for being free. Thank you for still being around. But if you want to join up and you want to be on that Frapper Map, at present, it seems the only way you can do that is to post an image. And most recently, someone has done that. Azathoth? A-Z-A-T-H-O-T-H-7. Azathoth 7 from Fitchburg, Massachusetts. Posted an image. And along with the image, he had this to say.
No matter where you go, there you are.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, and I remember my 80s correctly, is a reference to Buckaroo Banzai. Or I'm totally misquoting, and that has nothing to do with Buckaroo Banzai. But at any rate, thank you. Thank you very much, Azathoth 7. The image shows what appears to be, at first glance, an Australian bushman. I think that's what it is. Or a soldier in North Africa. I can't really tell. A little bit fuzzy, but that's the impression I get. A painting of such. Painting, cartoon, what have you. Not a photograph. At any rate, check it out for yourself. Go to the Frapper Map. Join. Have a picture ready. Doesn't have to be big. As a matter of fact, it's probably better if it isn't. Maybe 200 by 200 pixels, something like that. Just a little thing. even whatever it is that you use when you join forums and you want to put your picture up there. Anyway, there it was. What else have we? We have a shout-out to Hidden Death, a level 70 troll rogue on the Executus server. Why a shout-out to Hidden Death? Well, I recently posted a link on the forums for The Instance. The Instance, of course, is a World of Warcraft podcast. Very, very popular, very large listenership. Lots of fun to listen to. Because, what was the link? The link was to the audio that was already played on For the Horde Radio, produced for Anti-Ed and For the Horde Radio. It was that bit, I think I played it in the last episode, or the episode before that, whatever it was. The two non-player characters, the quest givers that were making fun of everyone that they were sending off to do all those silly jobs in the game. Well, I posted the link to that. And Hidden Death replied positively and said, "Hi, Anima 5, I listen to your show, IDDFOS, and really love it, and I love For the Horde Radio with Auntie Ed." And I replied to two people that I confused him with, not to Hidden Death. I thought he was someone else. I thought he was two someone else's. Well, I went back and corrected the mistake. At any rate, hi, Hidden Death, and thank you very much. This is a shout-out to you. Who else? The shout-out to the Absolute Peach, in alphabetical order, Ben and Joe, for a fine mention at the end of last week's episode. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Still very much enjoy the Absolute Peach, and recommend everybody go check them out. Lots of fun. All right. That was good. That was shout-outs. No ramblings from me. I actually managed to do that without getting too far off track. So I'm going to get right into the first email here, but I will precede it with a little bit of background here. This is from a new listener, but a very old friend, a very old and valued friend, Most Brilliant Friend Nikki. That is the handle that we have decided upon, or rather that she has decided upon among many that we selected, whatever. Nikki, I have worked with for the past, I guess it isn't really 16 years, it's probably 14. This scene shop warehouse that has been closing and that is now a kind of a gutted shell of itself. I'd post pictures, but they're too depressing. Oh, hell, maybe I'll just stick a link in there anyway. Nikki was the property mistress there. Nikki is involved in many of the stories that I've told connected with that scene shop. And most importantly, Nikki is the very good friend that actually turned on the lights for me as far as Terry Pratchett went. Before, I had never heard of Terry Pratchett. I had never read any of his works. I had also never heard of or read any of Patrick O'Brien's Aubrey Matron novels. And thanks to Nikki, I have that wide variety of fantastic literature to obsess about and constantly quote on the show and make references to. So she gets all the credit for that. She has admitted it's been part of her mission in life to spread the word about Terry Pratchett and how absolutely excellent his novels are. So let's hear from the very first input, and I hope we get much, much more, because she is a most brilliant friend, and very glad that she now, in fact, knows about IDDFOS. I've not exactly advertised the fact that I podcast where I work. Put yourself in my position and try to imagine telling everyone that you work with that you podcast. Anyway, Nikki writes this.
Guess who? My first answer to the question for episode 63.
This is the billboard question, but she knows it's going to be read here on episode 63. The three-sentence billboard question, replacing this on every billboard on Earth all at once. The first answer is,
tithe to the Church of Nikki. Give till it hurts. Second line, things just happen. What the hell? Didactylus from Discworld. Third answer is, it's not as bad as you think. Thanks for the opportunity to gain international notoriety, Marky Mark. Hugs and kisses. Most brilliant friend, Nikki.
Yes, she said Marky Mark, not Adam 5, and she has earned the right to call Adam 5 Marky Mark whenever she so chooses. Thank you very much, Nikki. I hope you get to hear this. And I hope you get to hear many, many future shows or any of the past shows. And please, write in. Switch from dial-up to high speed, for crying out loud. Sorry. No, actually, we're going to take a quick break, very quick break. And when we return, we will hear from Sarah of Does My Geek Look Big In This? Back in a bit.
And here is your song, and it's called One Alone to Be My Own. Alone, my love, to find your caresses. Song divine, and you are mine. I wonder how my love.
We regret to announce the sudden death of the well-known BBC tenor, Webster Smogpule. The program and the death were recorded. The next program follows in 1 second.
Here is the next program. With Patrick Sellers, Isaac Thecombe, and Tom Milligan, we present
The Greatest Mountain in the World, or I Knew Fred Kroot, or
The Greatest Mountain in the World.
This story opens in the basement of a disused fish-squirting factory. There, during a meeting being held by the Royal Geographical and Archaeological Society, a member is concluding his speech.
Alrighty, back we are. The dogs are getting nervous. What does that mean? That means it's 6:15 and I haven't put down any food for them, and I'm sitting in here by myself talking to no one in particular, which means that they think I'm either insane or mad at them. So they're one of them is running to hide in the bathroom, and the other one is just pretty much lounging on the couch until I finally get up to feed them. But that's not what we came back to hear. We came back to hear from Sarah of Does My Geek Look Big In This? Haven't heard from Sarah in a while, and it's always excellent to get feedback from Sarah. And she writes,
friendly greetings. I'm back from the deepest, darkest depths.
That's tough. That's a tough one. Deepest, darkest depths
of the IDDFOS vaults, where I have spent the last few treacherous and dusty weeks hunting for things that weren't there. Huzzah! I didn't find them. So I have created them with much use of gaffer tape and string. And here they are for your perusal. My missing answers. Episode 55. If you could sit down for dinner and conversation with anyone alive today, who would it be? Adam 5.
Thank you. That puts me in some pretty posh company as far as the rest of the answers go. That is extremely flattering, and I'm turning red. Adam 5. Well, you, I'm afraid I might disappoint, but that's certainly an excellent, valid answer. Thank you very much.
Episode 57. Is money still a tool used by people, or has it taken over the world and become a tool that uses us? I use money to buy Pringles. Is my money actually using me to buy it Pringles? Maybe. But the outcome is still me eating Pringles, so that's okay.
Alrighty. Also, a very, very concise and meaningful answer to the question.
Further, will a refusal to let go of money as the dominant ruler of humanity be the cause of our extinction? Nope, our extinction will be the result of our refusal to stop eating Pringles.
I should really learn to read these things cold for the first time for the episodes rather than pre-reading them, because I was out of breath from laughing at some of this stuff.
Episode 58. If you could be transformed into an immortal digital version of yourself, a nanotech cyborg, would you? Yes, already have. It's my Second Life character. You may say she doesn't do anything unless I'm logged in, but I have my doubts. Schrodinger's avatar, anyone?
That's eerie. That's just flat out eerie.
With the procedure available worldwide, what would you do about the resulting overpopulation? I believe asset server crashes would solve that problem naturally, and with minimal intervention on our part.
You know, there is something very disturbing about being a part of a very large population that could wink out of existence if somebody pulls the plug.
Episode 59. If you had unlimited funding and resources and could change anything or everything about the education system in your country, what would you do? Would you make the changes, and what would they be? I'd make it compulsory for everyone to be taught how to drive, buy and service a car, how to manage a household budget, how to cook a nutritious yet cheap meal, how to sew on a button, and finally, how to read so they can work everything else out for themselves. Oh yes, and I'd scrap physical education classes completely. They were invented by Satan.
Can't argue with any of that. I think I should just copy and paste that to my local representatives.
Episode 60. Feedback in the last 20 shows.
Woohoo! Rah, rah, rah! Kazing!
And loved the videos you posted on recycling, too.
Well, thank you very much.
Episode 61. If you could replace the content of every roadside billboard on Earth with one, two, or three sentences, what would you write? Sorry for the inconvenience. I don't create original content. Only borrow it from other more talented people.
I will beg to differ on that, too. This email attests to your creation of original content together with everything you've created in Second Life, also in a very short amount of time.
Episode 62. How many facts can you list that you know are absolutely true, but you can't prove them? Answer? 4. Topic for episode 63.
Yes, that's what she wrote. 4. And that is the answer to the question. Who's going to argue? Did I say you have to say what those facts are? No, I did not.
Topic for episode 63. 2 generations after an apocalypse, the survivors will hear 3 minutes of audio from you. What will they hear? Me whistling the theme tune from Bonanza.
That's just as good as any other damn thing you could record. It would be just as important, just as profound, and have just as big an effect on whoever was trundling that stick attached to a drum in the big V groove making the noise. Excellent. Absolutely excellent. Thank you very much, Sarah. There is an addendum here. There was another email sent. It turns out this spring and summer is not really good for anybody. I mean, just a lousy, lousy spring and summer for a lot of folks. And there was some sad news to relate to that she had at the top of the email. Very sorry to hear about that, Sarah. Just a disruption of the peace. An attack on the peace and the steadiness of the household. And it just, I'm just really sorry to hear about it. And coming out of the bad news portion of the email, what she says is,
fingers crossed that things have returned to the usual blend of lazy sameness.
That's what I'm looking forward to once I get employed someplace. I want to get back into some lazy sameness.
Yesterday I got very excited as I discovered MediaMaster.com, which essentially means I can stream my music collection for free as a URL radio stream into my land on Second Life. Now I can inflict my music on all my friends.
And she includes a link to MediaMaster, which of course will be in this episode's Gudikatinga Tungatungs.
I tried to have a look at the 2D and 3D digital artwork you recommended, but the website wanted me to register to look. I shall have to have another peek, as I was a bit hasty in running away from a forced registration.
Yeah, they do want you to sign up with an email address and say hi and essentially join their little club and ask you to be on their mailing list. Some folks don't like that. Occasionally, I'll run away from that too if I see it. And I don't blame you a bit. She continues.
Meanwhile, here's a couple of snaps I took in World today. I haven't done any post-production editing. This is how it looks. In World.
That's Second Life. Obviously, she's talking about Second Life. I don't have to tell you that.
With the graphics turned up to max. Of course, I can't actually walk or talk when the graphics are this high, but it looks pretty.
Folks, indeed it does. I really didn't know that Linden Labs had developed their tech to this degree. I didn't know that they were getting this level of sharpness and detail. I guess it's because on my machine, whenever I went in, it would default to whatever was best for my particular setup. My machine, I think, is about 5 years old, 4 or 5 years old. So graphics cards and machine speeds have increased significantly, and I imagine with a new machine, if I had the graphics turned up this high, wow, because I'm going to post these pictures, links to these pictures with thumbnails, also in the Kutikatingadongadongs for this show, and I think you should check them out because, wow. One is of her avatar. Here, she writes,
"My avatar on the beach at sunset. She looks a bit grumpy. I know she gets bored when I do photo shoots."
Okay. "But they're incredible pictures," is another one. Another one she describes.
"My little island on the coast set up with a pavilion for the beach party I'm planning in the near future."
Absolutely astounding graphics. Really, really nice looking. I just didn't know that it was, I didn't know that it was possible in Second Life. So check those pictures out, and look under the Kutikatingatungatungs for this show. She continues.
"Mostly apart from the above, we've been playing on the computer and cooking fabulous meals. Discovered Jamaican jerk chicken and rice and peas and fish pie and home-baked bread. Not all at once, obviously. Also, we've rediscovered the delights of jelly and ice cream." I don't know what you call jelly over there, but for us it's that wobbly stuff made with gelatin and flavored with fruit juice. Actually, heck, that sounds like jam, but I don't mean jam, I mean jelly. I think I'd better give up trying to explain that one. Hope your family and menagerie are all well and enjoying much health and happiness. Sarah."
Thank you very much, Sarah. I think we call it Jell-O. Yes, Jell-O brand. It's actually, we call things that are pretty generic foods by their brand name that they've been sold to us as for decades and decades. So, excellent. Very good. Super to hear from Sarah, and those answers were all spot on, as usual. Most cool. All right, we're going to cut to another break real quick, and when we return, we will hear from the Norwegian Viking, Mr. T. Back in a bit.
"Members, in view of Sir Edmund Hillary and Tiger Tenzing's great achievement last year, I have decided to go one better. I intend to climb the highest mountain in the world."
"But it's already been climbed."
"You're thinking of the one Hillary and Tenzing climbed. Well, now, I have news for you. I have discovered a higher one."
"What is its name?"
"Well, I can't keep this mountain a secret forever. It's bound to leak out eventually. I'll tell, and you're the first men to hear it. It's called Mount Everest."
"Pardon. Pardon, sir, but the mountain has already been climbed. Hooray."
"Climbed? Climbed by whom?"
"Hillary and Tenzing. Hooray."
"My goodness."
"So, they've climbed Mount Everest as well. What a dirty trick." "Never mind. I'll not be defeated by this dishonored stratagem. I will find a higher mountain."
"And where are we going to find this higher mountain?"
Boss.
"What, Ellington?"
"Why don't we build a higher mountain?"
"Build our own mountain?"
"Yeah."
"What rubbish? Get out!" "Has he gone?"
"Yes."
"Good. Gentlemen, I have a brilliant idea. Why don't we build our own mountain?
Brother, buddy. Yeah, buddy.
Thank you, buddy.
Okay, buddy.
Yes.
The Norwegian Viking. Mr. T. Thomas Vaselli is an artist. He is a composer. He is a filmmaker. He is soon to be a European media mogul of some kind before too long. I'm convinced of it. He is also, I believe, married now. I think, I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong. If not now, then very soon. At any rate, he is married to a lovely young woman. Absolutely beautiful. My congratulations to you both. Excellent. Take my word for it. Don't take my word for it. Well, take my word for it. Why not? But check it out for yourself, because he has sent along a link to pictures. And I'm very glad he did. This is a quick note. This is what he wrote. Found a computer and got hold of episode 62. And as requested, here are some pictures from Singapore. It was quite an experience. In Sydney now, so I'll tell you more later. And he includes the link. Yours truly, Mr. T. Folks, that link, of course, you can bet, is absolutely going to be in the Kutikatingatongatungs for this episode. Check it out. See the exotic sights. If, in fact, I get another link with more pictures, I will post that along with this one so that you can check out more of the exotic locations and places that film director, television producer, soundtrack writer, whichever Thomas gets involved in, if not one, then all of them, because I don't think anything's going to stop this young man. He is headed for the top, and I hope he gets there, and I hope he stays there, and I hope he says hello to all of us once he gets there. At any rate, thank you very much, Mr. T. Very glad you were able to get hold of a computer while you were out there in all those exotic places. Wonderful. All right, we're going to move on next to an email from, not an email, is it an email? No, it is a forum post with some news. It is from James, and he writes,
I'm now officially published, i.e., I'm in something non-electronic that actually carries publishing cred. I'm in the July 2008 issue of the School Library Journal with the article, Cardboard for the Silicon Set, which deals with traditional hobby games that would appeal to video gamers. You can see the online version of the print article here.
And he provides that link, and I checked it out. Congratulations, and well done, James Stubbs. Folks, I would check that article out not just because of the fact that James Stubbs wrote it, but because it provides a terrific resource. Whether you're a gamer that's interested in getting other people involved in your hobby, or you're a game store owner or employee, and someone comes up to you and says, what would be good for, check the article out. It's very comprehensive and very informative. And once again, well done and congratulations, James. He had additional comments to make in another post that responded to a post I made about fourth edition. I was considering getting it through Amazon rather than running out to a gaming store at possibly a higher price. I mentioned something about being a lapsed gamer, to borrow from the round table, and wondered if I qualified for that, not having played in something like 25 years. And James responded in this forum post,
nope, the encaffeinated one got it right. You're just not practicing currently. And yes, Annam, no bards, no sorcerers, no monks, no barbarians, no gnomes, no half-orcs, etc. The ability to play abstractly, i.e., without miniatures, is severely limited. Anyone who tells you otherwise is lying. All non-combatant skills outside of diplomacy have been removed.
Damn. This is quite obviously a very, very different game from 3.5. And it's also becoming more and more transparent just who their target audience is for this. But James continues.
But hey, I'm sure that once you buy the Player's Handbook 2 next year, and probably 3 the year after that, You'll have all the classes you used to have in one book. This, more than anything else, is what convinced me to set out 4th edition.
Who's going to argue? Can I argue? I can't argue with that.
I've got over $1,000 worth of 3.0 and 3.5 books, and I really don't see the need to repeat the process all over again. And to be honest, if I want to play World of Warcraft, I've got a computer. I will, however, be buying Paizo Publishing's Pathfinder RPG, which takes the 3.5 rules and makes some tweaks and improvements to them, making essentially 3.75, so that I can continue to use all my old books. By the way, the Pathfinder beta rules are available completely free for anyone to look over.
And he provides the link to that. So, people that are interested in continuing new adventures in a game system that they've grown very comfortable with and enjoy playing with should take a tip from James here and check out Paizo Publishing's Pathfinder RPG. This whole 4th edition thing, I'm understanding what it's about. I mean, I've heard the playtests. I've heard a couple of playtests so far from different gaming groups. And some of them sound like they're having a hell of a lot of fun. Some of them sound like they're struggling a bit to get used to just how different it is. But I can see what they're really looking for. What they're really looking for is that video game audience, that online MMO playing audience. Folks are saying that they're borrowing elements from the massive multiplayer online role-playing games. And to me, that's kind of like, well, okay, if that's really the case, then what are they doing except reclaiming their own? Because to be honest, folks, if it weren't for Dungeons & Dragons coming out in the 70s, maybe there would be massively multiplayer online role-playing games, but they wouldn't be anything close to what they're like now. They owe their creation, existence, and form to D&D. They just do. So it's kind of like passively reciprocating to the genre and the gaming form that created it in the first place, MMOs. They're trying to grab whatever is appealing about that particular form of entertainment and incorporate it into their tabletop system to sell more books. That's what they do. They're a company that sells. They're selling a brand. They're selling a game. They've got to make money. And it's not going to make everybody happy, that's for sure. All right. So the very excellent news. Check out the article, the online version of the printed article that James wrote. And thank you very much for the recommendation of the Paizo Pathfinder RPG. Way to go, James. Once again, forum posts. I'm seriously thinking about backing up as much as I can of the current forums and maybe going with a different type, maybe stepping away from PHP, BB. Not going to happen anytime soon, I can tell you that, but eventually I'm going to have to go ahead and do it. You know already, if you want to join the forums, all you have to do is send an email to anim5@anim5.com and I'll set you up, I'm probably not going to get the kind of active forum membership that's in addition to the cool folks that we already have there, so long as I've removed the ability to instantly just go there at any time and register. The incredible onslaught of spam attacks that were incurred because of the fact that people could still do that was really inconvenient. So I'm thinking of maybe stepping away from PHP BB into another type of forum, but you'll get plenty of warning before that. In the meantime, if you'd like to join the forums and contribute and become an active poster, just send an email. All right, we're going to go to a link. We're going to go to a break. And the break will link us to an email from, not an email, also a forum post from Ed the Puppeteer. A final road horror story from Ed. So Come back for that right after this. Back in a bit.
Yes, now where... Where will we build this mountain? Yes, Mr. Crumb?
I think we should build it in Hyde Park.
Why Hyde Park?
Well, it's handy for the buses and shops.
Hyde Park. Any objection?
Oh, yes. If we build this mountain on England, England would sink under the weight.
Sink? In that case, this mountain would be invaluable. People could climb up the sides and save themselves from drowning.
Mussy, you're right. Hurry and build it before we all drown.
Splendid. No. Who will second Mr. Crumb's idea?
I will.
Anyone else?
Yes, me.
Excellent. Mr. Crumb, your idea has won support.
I thank them. I walk in the shadow.
Yes, I can see that. On Monday, then, we start cleaning Hyde Park. Failing that, we'll start on Monday. If not, in Hyde Park on Monday. Meeting adjourned.
Alrighty. Ed mentioned earlier in the forums that he was going to regale us with yet one, at least one last horror story from the road. Things that can go wrong and do. And very glad that he did. And I yoink this from the forums as well. He writes,
"Here's my last tale of horror for a while. One of our shows is called Out of the Mist, a Dragon. Early in the show, during a moment of great tension, one of the puppets is transformed into a 10-foot dragon puppet through the help of lighting, special effects, and misdirection. On one particular tour, my wife was the puppeteer who puts the dragon puppet in position for the transformation. At the very moment when the transformation is to take place, I hear a terse whisper from behind the curtain, 'We have no dragon!' We dimmed the lights and quickly took the puppets off stage. I made some announcement about technical difficulties while the other puppeteers began searching madly for the dragon puppet backstage. Well, two of them did. The third ran to the facilities and threw up. I grabbed my keys for the trailer that transports our sets and puppets and raced outside. I got there, unlocked a padlock, and threw open the door and saw the dragon puppet still in its case in the trailer. I grabbed it and ran back in, unpacked the puppet, took a moment to breathe and unclench, made an announcement that we had resolved our technical issue, and began the show again. Whew. Ed."
Holy crap. talk about your horror moments. Talk about your horror moments in theater. Can you imagine if it was one of those situations where the auditorium was on the third floor? I'm only guessing at the size of this thing. I don't know how big the case was that this dragon was in. I'm picturing one of those heavy reinforced corner anvil cases that you generally put audio equipment in with foam padding on the inside. That would be the lightest version I could think of something to put that puppet in. And just picturing you trying to get that sucker up three flights of stairs while an audience is sitting there waiting for the show to... Oh, man! Oh, man, what a horror. Well, congrats. That was a recoverable thing. A terrible experience in the moment, of course. And simply because of that, all the more memorable. I'm going to get into a story here that I don't know, and it's not a long one, don't worry. I don't remember whether I've told this on the show or not, or in a cardboard rant or whatever. My brain is a souffle right now. If I've told this already, I'm sorry, but it bears repeating right here. This was an unrecoverable moment. I think I have told this. Anyway, a dance school. Major dance recital. One of those things where they've got so many students and so much audience and have sold so many tickets that they run the thing for like four nights. Well, they ran this show for four nights because of the size of their school, and it was a 2,000-seat house, It was on a college campus where they paid for the use of the facility, whatever. Major dance recital, one of the largest in the metropolitan area because of the size of the school. Anyway, that didn't prevent the producers from being foolishly cheap with probably one of the most vital aspects of their show, i.e. the soundtrack. Back to the soundtrack again. Yeah, they don't hire an orchestra to play, of course, for their dance recital. They put the music on tape. Well, they used cheap cassettes. The producer for this particular school used cheap cassettes. Now, very early on in the show, and it runs for something like 2.5 or 3 hours because of all the different schools and grades and levels of skill. Very early in the show, they have the kind of preteen pop dance numbers. And to give you an idea how long ago this was, they were using the most recent popular Dance Like an Egyptian. No, Walk Like an Egyptian, sorry. That was the number that they were dancing to. Walk Like an Egyptian. Fine. Went through that particular number. Another hour and a half goes by, and it gets to be the finale. The finale is presented by their ballet class, and really an incredible soloist, not soloist, what do you call them? The lead dancer and the dance captain, whatever, the head of the star pupil was in their stage production, their staged choreographed version of Slaughter on 10th Avenue. And it starts out very, very bam, 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 da 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 da, and the curtain goes up, and they're doing their Slaughter on 10th Avenue number. It's kind of a gangster costumed speakeasy production number. But they put a lot of their money into the sets for this one too, because they had painted backdrops and whatever. All right, what happened? Why am I dragging this out so long? This is what happened. They get to the finale, and they're beginning Slaughter on 10th Avenue, and they're halfway through the thing, and there's a gunshot because somebody's supposed to get it. Some mobster's supposed to get it on stage, and he gets it. And all of a sudden, instead of having the final denouement, the final cathartic, artistic, bring the house down finale to Slaughter on 10th Avenue, the ballet, the pride and joy of this school's production, and the culmination of the work of all the students that practiced for months and months and months rehearsing this number, we don't hear the Slaughter on 10th Avenue music anymore. We suddenly hear Walk Like an Egyptian backwards because the tape was too thin, because the cassette tape had twisted around on itself, or the magnetics of it or whatever had bled through and overpowered Slaughter on 10th Avenue. The guy recorded his show on two sides of thin, cheap cassette tapes. There was nothing we could do but bring down the house curtain and just apologize and send everybody home. That was annoying. That was unrecoverable. And we felt like shit. I probably could have told that better, but I've got dogs staring at me. Ed, thank you very much for that horror story from the road. I hope that nothing happens this year that's going to result in a story that you have to tell us. I hope everything goes very smoothly and you don't run into any kind of difficulties that come even close to what you described. But if you do, or if you remember others, please feel free to share them with us. Or even some of the really nicest experiences you've had on the road. I don't mean to try and draw from you only experiences of theatrical doom. The good stuff counts too. And thank you very, very much for writing in again. Please continue to do so. All right, excellent. We're going to go to a break. A very quick one again, and when we return from that, we will hear from Direwolf in the form of a forum post. Back in a bit.
Work began and a great area in the park was cleared. The method was very simple. One digging, one filling in, and one looking for fresh places.
Foreman Spruntley!
Or,
glad to hear it. Now, did you drain the water from the Serpentine?
Or, and we filled it in with solid concrete.
Concrete, good. Oh, that's very good.
What a beautiful morning. Be my love. And would the orchestra set me burning? Ooh, what a beautiful morning.
Heckles.
Yo?
What are you doing?
Having a good time.
Having a good time? How'd you get that lump on your head?
I just dived in the Serpentine.
Dived in? Did you know it was solid concrete?
No, but I know now. In any case, I wouldn't dare dive in a pool with water in it.
Why not?
Oh, can't swim.
Next up, we have this forum post from Direwolf.
Hey all, it has been a while. I am terribly behind on podcasts. And I am back on episode 57 of IDDFOS. I am 9 or 10 behind on some others. Every now and then I get a chance to check forums, and then I get lost in real life again. For those that might remember, where I worked was destroyed by a tornado last year. And really, there have been so many tornadoes this year. I heard it may be one of the highest years for tornadoes. Here, after a year, things are getting back to a new form of normal at work, but still the town is not completely recovered. Many buildings on our main street are just permanently blocked off with fences, as they are still dangerous to be around. Construction here and there, tarps, plywood over windows, on and on. The school will not be finished and running until after this next school year. Going through all this for so long, my heart sinks every time I hear another town was hit. For my work, our new building is done, and we moved the office staff from the off-site temp offices into the new offices in May. It is simply huge. I have been busy getting the network and computer set up, as well as reintegrating all the data back into one system like it was before the tornado. We are setting up the lab, and so I am very busy setting up equipment now. But we are planning to be finished with the rebuild and have an open house in early August. So, almost 1 year of reconstruction, but nearing completion. So, that is where I am currently, trying to get a post here and there on forums when I can. Just to mention a couple of things I've heard on IDDFOS casts that I just listened to. I heard Anna mention my dogs. If I remember correctly, at the time I sent the email, we had 11 dogs. Currently, we have 14 dogs. Ashley, Leela, Jack, Buzz, Spirit, Brandy, Misty, Sky, Buddy, Sandy, Blackberry, Maddie, Sarah, and the puppy, Crispy. They really are a handful.
A handful. They're a handful. I don't picture that many dogs being a handful. I picture being submerged in canines. I can't even comprehend it. I can't even comprehend it. I read it. You know what? I'm going to do this just because I want to.
Ashley, Leela, Jack, Buzz, Spirit, Brandy, Misty, Sky, Buddy, Sandy, Blackberry, Maddie, Sarah, and the puppy Crispy.
I'm sorry, I just needed to do that.
Also, Adam was talking about the never-ending story.
Yes, my embarrassing confession that there is one particular moment in the film that actually made me cry. That point where the little princess is saying, Bastion, why can't you do what you dream?
My wife and I played the theme to the movie at our wedding, so we both liked the movie.
Oh, excellent. Good deal.
Well, that is all for now. Just wanted to give an update, and hopefully I can get caught up on the shows soonish. Also, I hope to post more on some of the forums, but then I have thought that before. We will see.
And that from Direwolf. Thank you very much, Direwolf. Absolutely, please keep us informed on where you're at and what's going on over there in 14 dogs. Holy crap! I can't get over that. That is insane. I think my responses to that on the forum essentially were recommendations that he set up a dog sled, or a dog cart. I guess it would have to be wheeled, because as much as dog food costs, it's got to be cheaper than gas. But anyway, excellent to hear from you again. As best you can, please keep us informed and keep writing in. Good to hear that the rebuild process is well underway. I don't know that I ever expected that the town would recover in a year. I'm sure you, from what experiencing it firsthand, I'm sure you didn't think so either. But it's good to hear that at least it progresses, that things are being done. What a dangerous place. There's no place on earth that's safe, really. There just isn't. Something's going to happen everywhere. You just don't want to, you know, can't comprehend it. All right. We'll have one last break here for this episode, after which we will get right into finding out what this show's old-time radio genre nugget is going to be. And we'll find that out right after this. Back in a bit.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley. Believe it or not. The first 21-gun salute to the American flag was fired in 1776 by Johannes de Graaf, governor of the West Indies. Whereupon he was promptly dismissed for such an unlawful act. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about the most unusual home run exhibition ever seen.
Hello, Lord Seagull. Look what I've got in this little box.
Oh, it's a little lump.
Yes, a lump. I've put it on the ground. There. Now, I'm going to make a mountain out of that.
What is it?
A molehill.
Anyone about here?
Yes, us.
What are you three laying down for?
A very good reason.
What's that?
You just ran over us.
Are you Mr. Cron?
Only just.
Well, this parcel on my lorry is for you.
Oh, that'll be the mole for my molehill. Come on, help me lift it down.
Ooh.
Ooh, got the old belt on. Good luck.
Good grief, it weighs a ton. Now let's get the string cut. Eccles the scissors.
Okay, here we go. A bit there, one there. How's that?
Very good. But I didn't want a haircut.
Do you know the greatest number of home runs ever hit by a professional baseball player in 1 hour? The man who set the record was Babe Ruth at Wrigley Field, Chicago, in 1927. Babe stood at the plate for an hour while various pitchers tossed him balls to hit over the fence. When the hour was up, the amazed crowd had watched the greatest home run exhibition of all time. The total home runs hit was 125. Believe it or not.
Okay, the old-time radio genre nugget, the snippet, the blast from the past. Just a couple of minutes from way before you were born, probably. I don't know, it was 1944 before you were born. I know it predates me. Well, this was September 19th, and the place was Camp Borden, Canada. It was one of those Entertain the Troops shows that Bob Hope did, and he did hundreds upon hundreds of them over the course of his career. I don't know, maybe over 1,000. That'd be an interesting number to find out, or not. Well, anyway, this is the Bob Hope Show. It's 1944. It's September. It's Camp Borden in Canada. And here's a couple of minutes of that. Please enjoy.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's a good friend of mine we're very happy to have with us tonight, that world traveler, famous war correspondent and author, Quentin Reynolds.
Thanks, boys.
Really, Bob, I don't know yet why you invited me to appear on your program.
I'll skip that, Quentin, because I don't enjoy fighting with my guests. That is not the men.
Seriously, I'm very glad. I'm very glad to be here, Bob. I love your program. Listening to it keeps me thin.
Laughing, huh?
Oh, no, Bob. Bending over to turn it down between musical numbers.
I thought we'd been having more music than your waistline looks like.
This is like old times, isn't it, Bob?
Sure is.
Remember when we met in London in that blackout?
I sure do. What about it?
Nothing. Just give me back my watch.
I can't. I put it in my pocket and some thief poured acid on my suspenders and stole my pants.
Those blackouts were really something, weren't they, Bob? To say nothing of that London fog.
Yeah, what fog? You can't even see the end of your nose.
You have trouble on a clear day.
Well, it comes in handy for cleaning my pipe anyway. But, Quentin, I'll always remember how swell you were to me during those bombings.
Don't be silly, Bob. We always revive anyone who faints in an air raid shelter. Say, I've been reading about your trip to the South Pacific. How'd you get along with the Australian girls, Bob?
Well, Quentin, they speak a different type of English. They can hardly understand you, and you can hardly understand them. It's wonderful.
It's wonderful. What's so wonderful about that?
Well, when you ask them for a kiss, by the time they look it up in the dictionary, it's too late. Listen, I get tired of talking about myself, Quentin. Let's talk about something uplifting, something of great importance.
Yes, Bob, I've read your book.
Yeah. Well, mention the name of it. You say you've read my new book, I Never Left Home?
Yes, Bob, and I couldn't put it down.
You couldn't put it down?
No, what a novel idea. Flypaper covers.
That's catchy, isn't it, huh?
I didn't know you were a writer, Bob.
Yes, people tell me I'm as good a writer as I am a comedian.
Well, chin up.
You want to talk about a career that spanned multiple decades and generations? There's one. Bob Hope. Incredible. Between movies, television, and radio, just known all over the world. And what did he live to be? He lived to be in his late 80s or early 90s or something. I should check some of this stuff out before I go playing their old stuff. Well, anyway, top of his form in 1944 and into the 50s. And there's that. That whole show is something like 25 minutes. And it will be available completely. It's got music in it. It's got lots. It's a variety show. It's a stage variety show for the troops in Camp Borden. And it'll be available for download with a right-click save as, if you'd care to check it out, The Bob Hope Show. Well, you know what? Here we are. We're at the part where I'm supposed to ramble. Well, actually, no, not where I'm supposed to ramble. The part where I am supposed to offer coherent and intelligent commentary on the subject matter that I myself proposed to be discussed in this particular episode. My logic, my organization, my presentation is supposed to reflect a competent mind and the gravity of the philosophical question posed. That's not what's going to happen, but that's what's supposed to happen here. We only got one answer. I think, wait a minute, am I lying? I think we only got one answer, and it was Sarah that answered the question for episode 63. That is to say, for, you know, timely enough for it to be read in 63. Anybody that's got additional input as far as it goes knows the drill. It can come at any time. 3 minutes of audio from you that people will hear after an apocalypse, two generations after an apocalypse, when they've had time to forget what television and recorded audio is all about. So whatever it is they hear is going to appear, seem to be magic. Somebody's going to figure out that if they trundle that stick in the V groove and attach it to a drum, they can play back the sound whatever it was. So what would it be? What would I play? I really like that whistling the theme song to Bonanza. Because really, all it's going to be is some echo from the before time. It can't have any particular meaning to people that are suddenly taken to trapping animals and eating wild plants and to borrow from Earth Abides. I think George R. Stewart wrote a novel called Earth Abides. At the very end of it, they had become tribal again, and the only thing coins were really good for was to pound them into arrowheads. So pennies had a value, if only because you could smack them with a rock and make them sharp and stick them on the end of your arrows. Stuff like that. What would I put? I don't know. Probably a Mozart concerto or something like that. I was reminded that something that I would send out into space, the audio recording that I would send out into space in the form of a titanium cylinder as opposed to a wax cylinder to stick into one of those compartments in the giant granite block. What would I have put on that? I think it was, hello, 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 just like the Three Stooges. Why not? It could be a mixture of anything. What I would probably strive to do, to put in that recording, is an indication that something other than voices and drums were used to generate music. So it would probably be something as close to electronic, possibly even orchestral, with like a pipe organ or something, all variety of instruments that no longer exist or had anyone alive that was able to play it anymore. Not sure. Not really sure. What could you tell someone? If it was in spoken language, you'd have to assume that probably two generations from now, people still could easily understand, you know, a specific language. That's not going to go away in two short generations. But what could you actually tell a people that generation that had never experienced electricity? What can you tell them about the way things used to be? Would you encourage them to go back to that? Would you try to offer 3 minutes of advice or instruction on what to do, where to look for things, what to experiment with first, what breakthrough should they attempt to start up and jumpstart technology again? Would you really do that? I guess a lot would depend on how the apocalypse came about. Now, I think I put the proviso in when I was describing the question that it would not be a nuclear one, because that, of course, would make anything a moot point, because no remaining human civilization would survive it. Those that were alive long enough even to attempt to procreate would not be procreating very successfully. It would just be a pretty quick die out of most living things on Earth. So a non-nuclear apocalypse, possibly an asteroid strike, possibly a disease let loose, either created by us or just mutated from whatever. What would you tell people? How would you put them back on track for technology? I mean, could you really tell them spin a ball of sulfur on a stick and see how it attracts wool and lint? How would you tell them in an audio fashion what sulfur is? Spin a magnet inside copper wire and see what happens? How could you tell them what a magnet is? I guess two generations from now, they could still probably figure that out. There would still be plenty of people that could at least tell them what a magnet was. But I guess part of the question ties into what I was talking about earlier as far as changing the education system. Because I remember thinking to myself, well, what if some kind of an apocalypse like that happened, would people really be struck back to the medieval era, or would it be even worse? Because in the medieval era, at least most of the people still knew how to get what they needed out of the land. Most people still recognized plants and the names of plants, seeds, and what they were called and what they looked like and when to plant them. Most of the people that produced the food and lived off the land, the peasants, the serfs, the lowest common denominator, knew more then than our kids know now in a situation like that. It was like I was talking about before. Our kids would not know, they don't know how to farm. They don't know what is edible that grows wild. They don't know how to make a fire. They can't make fire. Inner city kids, anyway. And I don't know how many suburban or rural kids would actually just be able to go right out there with nothing. So would we be set back even further than the medieval era? Who knows? I don't think I have... This episode has gone long enough without me having to add a whole bunch of extraneous stuff that has to do with this question. But anybody that's got anything particularly devastatingly, earth-shatteringly better than a TV theme show tune, because I'm leaning towards Gilligan's Island now. Now I'm just leaning towards playing the theme song to Gilligan's Island. Because it would be just about as valuable as anything else. Or maybe I'm wrong. I tell you what I wouldn't play. I absolutely would not play Casper the Friendly Ghost. I think we should get something really straight here, right now. I never loved Casper. That song is total bullshit. And I think they had a lot of nerve back then to let something like that on the air. The friendliest ghost you know? How can they assume that I know? How many ghosts do they think I know? It's like they think, you know, Tuesday nights, Wednesday nights, that's when Fred Conigliaro, the ghost, comes over. And he's kind of a jackass and is not very friendly, and I don't like him. And then on Thursday and Friday night, Bill Parlovecchio, the ghost. Saturdays, Johnny Sandoval comes over. He's okay, but he's just, you know, none of them are as friendly as Casper. They can't make that kind of an assumption. How can they make that assumption? And how many ghosts do they assume that I know? I'll clue them in. I didn't know any. I didn't know any ghosts. So Casper had no competition. Grown-ups might look at him with fright. Gee, you think? I'll be honest, if you walked into your bedroom and you saw that thing floating in the corner and it, like, grinned at you in that nice, big, friendly face and said hi, I would be doing two things at once. I would probably be relieving myself in my pants while running out the door. I don't know what you would do. It would freak me out. But kids all know why they love him so. No, they don't. I don't know. I can't name a single friend of mine back there in the 60s when we were watching Casper the Friendly Ghost that actually loved Casper the Friendly Ghost. And I think if you've got it on DVD and they're in repeats and you have a child and that child actually says to you, Mom, Dad, I love Casper the Friendly Ghost. Just like it says in the song. Have the kid checked out. You know what? Take her to a professional and just, you know, because that's not right. It's a weird thing. Kind to every living creature. You know, wherever he may go, he is kind to every living creature. What is he, a conservationist? Is he like one of these ecologists? One of these, I guess he's a vegetarian ghost. Very easy to be a vegetarian if you're a ghost. What's your diet? Nothing. You can call yourself a vegetarian and be absolutely right. All you got to do is stuff some leaves in where your face used to be. Well, I don't know. I'm not going to waste any more of your time on this one. You just go ahead and check out the lyrics to Casper the Friendly Ghost and you'll find out what an utter lie it is. And I never loved Casper the Friendly Ghost, and I don't think any child ever loved Casper the Friendly Ghost. I'm going to get off of this now and play you some music. by way of apology for the past 10 minutes. This is a piece from, I have not identified the music bed, the background music. It is from a group called Decamera. That's how Magnatune pronounces it. The album title is A Celtic Celebration. And if it's a Celtic celebration, maybe they should be pronounced Decamera. I could be wrong. Well, anyway, check out this piece. It is called, as I look for the name, Bellarima, Division Upon a Ground. And it was composed by Eccles. It's from the album that I've been using as background bed music. Hope you enjoy. Very talented group, Decamera, or Decamera, if you'll go by Magnatune. Magnatune's pronunciation of who they are, from the album, A Celtic Celebration. There'll be a link, of course, to them and their music, that album, that live streaming thing that I've been putting at the end of the Gudukatingatungatungs for the show music. Of course, for this episode, you'll find that. And so, here we have it, the end of episode 63. I would very much like to thank Nikki, most brilliant friend Nikki, for writing in. Please write in again. I'd like to thank Sarah of Does My Geek Look Big in This? The Norwegian Viking, Mr. T, for the link to the images that he has gathered during his exotic trip. Excellent news and commentary from the forums, from James Stubbs, thank you very much. Thank you, Ed the Puppeteer. And thank you, Direwolf. And thanks once again to Azathoth7 for joining the Frapper Map. Don't forget, please, any awards voting. If this is released on time, if this episode is released on time, we'll start tomorrow. Do me a favor, vote for the Wandering Geek Podcast. I'm going to. Thanks once again to Hidden Death. And thanks once again to the Absolute Peach. And thank you very much for listening. The question for episode 64. No, I didn't forget. I've been getting closer and closer to the very end of the show before actually giving it out. The question, the topic for episode 64 is a very simple one. What secret, what one secret would you personally wish to have revealed and answered? That'll be for 64. That, of course, implies that there is a secret of some type that has an answer. On a human scale, of course, it would be knowledge or information that very few people know and are withholding. In the natural world, it would be something like the secret to anti-gravity or faster-than-light travel or some such thing as that. Any secret, but the one that you most want to see revealed for all of us or for yourself personally. And hopefully we'll get plenty of feedback for that answer in episode 64. That, of course, also will be the episode in which I explain why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes very well for you. And until then, best of days.
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.